Welcome, Voltron fans, to Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. I am your host, Mark Morrell, and joining me is my co-host, Greg Tyler.
Hello, Mark. Hello, Voltron fans. Great to be here as always.
Yes, it is. It's a great day to be a Voltron fan, isn't it?
Every day is a great day to be a Voltron fan.
What are you excited about right now, Greg?
Well, I'm excited about a lot of things, but I got to tell you, one of the things that's got me really excited is our friend Lendi Tayog, whom we interviewed in episode 58. To give a quick recap, he had made a Lego model of the 1980s version of Lion Force Voltron, and the Lego group is reviewing his design. It received 10,000 supporters, and so Lego is going to be reviewing it soon as a possible real product. As a follow-on to that, Lendi has three other Lego projects out there on the Lego Ideas website. That's ideas.lego.com. If you search for Voltron, you'll see three projects by our friend Lendi. He's identified on that site as Len_D69. He has a fully transformable Voltron as seen in Voltron Legendary Defender. He has a bust of that same Voltron, much larger in size, with a cockpit where you can stick a Shiro minifig inside, which is really cool. And his latest is a model, a transformable model of Vehicle Team Voltron from the 1980s. All three of these look fabulous. And, you know, Voltron fans around the world showed overwhelming support for Lendi's original project. I would love to see Voltron fans put these projects over the top and get Lego's attention. What do you think?
Well, I think if you want to see a regular stream of Voltron Lego projects that you yourself can go out to the Lego store and buy, you know, I think you should support Lendi's projects here. All right, we've already supported the original classic Voltron, the Lion Force Voltron, and it quickly got to 10,000. But these new projects have the new show. So you have Voltron Legendary Defender Voltron, and then you have the Voltron head, the you know, the bust, which is like it's big.
Yes,
I don't know. I don't know if people can tell, you know, by the size of things, but it's a big head.
Yes, it is. You can build the head. Yes, it's really slick. And Vehicle Team Voltron, whether you are a fan of 80s Voltron of any kind or of Vehicle Team Voltron in particular, I would encourage you to support all of these projects because the more Voltron, you know, gets the attention of Lego, the more likely that Lego or a similar company may want to produce licensed building sets for our favorite giant robot. So let's get out there and support this.
And the great thing about this is it's not just people putting up a whole ton of votes. Like, you can't vote 100 times on this. You create your account on Lego Ideas website, and you only get to vote once.
Yes, that's right.
So this is, you know, 10,000 distinct people that have said, yes, I support this project, and I've already gone out and supported all of them.
That's great. We've all enjoyed a huge influx of brand new fans to Voltron, and let's all come together like Voltron. You know, Voltron fans from days of long ago and from, you know, these last few months. But let's join forces and make this happen.
I can tell you right now, Greg, we have many more listeners now on today's podcast than we did back when we did the Lendi Tayog podcast back on number 58.
Wow, that's so cool.
So we have a lot of people now listening that can go out to the Lego Ideas site, sign up, and support those projects.
Yeah, that's so awesome. And I would also encourage our newer listeners to check out one of our more recent episodes. It's Voltron 101. If you are new to Voltron through Voltron Legendary Defender, I think you'll get a kick out of learning some of the earlier Voltron programs that have been made. If you're an older school fan of Defender of the Universe from the 80s and you're curious about what this new stuff's all about, check that podcast out. I think you'll learn a lot in a pretty short time. So give that a listen if you would.
So I have to ask you, Greg.
Yeah.
Did you think this day would ever come?
No, I didn't. I'm really excited about this episode. And, you know, we both know what's coming up.
This came on short notice, and we know how busy this person is, and we're very lucky to have her with us.
Absolutely.
So this is the day we get to talk to legendary voice director Andrea Romano.
Yeah, so, so cool.
So I cannot wait to hear all her stories about Voltron Legendary Defender.
I am really excited too. Let's get right into it, man.
Andrea Romano is the most celebrated voice director of our generation, a legendary talent who is responsible for the successful careers of hundreds of voice actors and has won 8 Emmy Awards with 22 nominations and has influenced millions of children with great animated series like Animaniacs, Pinky and the Brain, Batman the Animated Series, Teen Titans Go, Avatar, The Last Airbender, The Legend of Korra, the list goes on and on. And if you look up Andrea Romano on IMDb, it takes about 5 minutes to load because there's so much data. Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, the voice director for Voltron Legendary Defender, Andrea Romano.
Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. This is a real treat for me. I first remember seeing your name in the end credits of Tiny Toon Adventures and wondering, who is that person with that really cool name? And and now I'm talking with you. This is such a treat.
You're so sweet. Hey, I have to say one thing. Thank you for that very kind introduction. There's two bits of information I'd like to update. I have well over 33 Emmy nominations. And I did not direct Teen Titans Go. However, I did cast and direct the original series, Teen Titans. So
I'm
just
sorry.
To set the record straight. No need to apologize. I want to set the record straight. I want someone who is working on the, hey, that's my gig.
Well, you are responsible for bringing about many careers of many voice actors, including people like Greg Sipes, right?
It's absolutely true. I'm very proud to say that. Absolutely.
You know, based on the fact that you've done all this and that many people are thanking you for their successful careers and stuff like that, how does that make you feel?
Just wonderful. You know, we work in a business, the animation business, where in voicing things, we're at the very beginning of the process. And then we're again at the very end of the process. And sometimes that's easily a year in between times.
Wow.
And so there's a very long waiting period for the end result. But when you watch a talent just bloom in front of you, like a Greg Sipes, and just watch him go from a natural talent, and we all knew that there was something there, but to watch him just develop this remarkable career day after day after day, he grew and grew and grew. And there's several actors that fall under this category as well that I've been lucky enough to work with. It's so rewarding to see that happen instantaneously. You literally watch somebody, you give them a direction, they get better on the next take. It's instant gratification. And so there's that aspect of working with actors that's so pleasant, so pleasurable, so rewarding. And so it makes me very proud to have been a part of many voice actors' lives. And certainly Greg Sipes is a great example. One of my favorite examples too, Mark Hamill.
Wow.
Who actually acted me when we were first casting and directing Batman the Animated Series. And I did not know what a huge comic book fan he was. I had no idea about his, you know, crazy knowledge of the world that is Batman and the DC universe. And he contacted me through his voiceover agent saying, I'd like to be a part of that. And we brought him in as a guest star and he was terrific. And after the session, he said, you know, Andrea, thank you so much for the gig, but I really want to be a part of the show. And that's when we needed him to come in and play the Joker for us. And then another, you know, I just watched his voiceover career from that point just go crazy. I don't think he had any voiceover credits before that. But that voice and that character that he created was so iconic and so remarkable, I think, to fans throughout the world that everybody started to sit up and take notice and say, ooh, this is a really good, not just an actor. They already knew he was a good actor, but they went, this is a good voiceover talent.
Wow,
and so
wow.
That's another really great talent that I'm very proud to have helped bring along you know, as they worked. Another is Ron Perlman.
Oh,
Ron Perlman not worked in voiceover until I cast him. Good Lord, you guys, I can't even think of what year it was. It was a series called Bonkers for Disney. And so we're talking maybe 30 years ago. I first cast him as that show, in that show. And that show was not very long-lived. It went by pretty fast. But yeah, it was his first voiceover, serious voiceover gig. And then, you know, look at him. He just took off and did so much work. So there's a lot of actors like that who have got first shot at them and got to sort of play with them and spoil them and then send them off into the voiceover, the cruel voiceover world that is out there. And I still work with all of them even to this day. It makes me so happy.
Wow.
That's great. One of the first questions I thought of was, when you work with an actor to define a character, how collaborative is that? Is that mostly from the actor? Is it mostly you bringing something to the table, or is it very collaborative? How does that work?
You know, it's different for every single actor and for every single project. I like it best. I think of casting a show like casting a party, putting together a bunch of people who will have fun together, and more importantly, people who will bring something to the party. And in that way, that's when we get the most collaborative work. For example, to be very specific about Voltron, we work with an actor named Steven Yeun, who's absolutely fantastic and wonderful. And Steven always has input. He always pitches ideas for, what if this line were this way? What if I were to, and his ideas are so good, and most of them are usable. You know, sometimes they're just not exactly right, and they don't go with what the animation is going to ultimately be, but he always has ideas. He always has, and I love that. I love it when I don't just tell an actor what to do. Now, I'm certainly capable of doing that. I can give an actor a line reading and say, just give it back to me exactly that way, and I know it will work. But I'd much rather have them come up with their own ideas, have them, you know, come up with something that's completely different than what I thought it would sound like, and then turn to the producers and say, I know this isn't what you might have thought, but it's valid, organic, and it's real. Can we make that work? And I love when that happens. And then the producers have the right to say, yes, we can, or no, we really need it to be the way that we all thought it was going to be in the first place. Okay. And so it's my pleasure always to work with each actor at the level that they're at, and at the level of commitment that they're willing to dive in and play and come up with their own ideas. Some actors don't want that responsibility, some do. And so it's nice to work with them on their own levels.
Oh, great. Thank you for that. That's just such a fascinating insight. You know, actors, everybody being individuals and working in a studio where you're not necessarily all live and on camera at the same time, does that help to shape the character in some way that it might not if someone were on an actual set? Do you think that the method being different, recording for animation versus live action, do you think that can be a benefit in helping to define a character, or is that a drawback in some ways?
Well, there's several aspects to answer that question. The first thing about voiceover for animation is when you're casting it, sometimes you can cast actors never be cast on camera in those roles. That's a wonderful joy about voiceover. It doesn't matter if you're pretty enough or young enough or blonde enough or thin enough. Essentially, you can either do the voice or you can't do the voice. And when it comes right down to it, it's all about the acting. It really is. It's lovely if you can do multiple voices, but if you can't act, and if you can't act the energy animation, which is closest to on stage acting. Film and TV acting tends to be much more small and contained. People with stage performance experience tend to slide into animation voice acting better. They understand the energy better.
Okay.
Now, I do not cast this series. I direct the series. And there's a beautiful casting team in place. And I hope that you do spend some time chatting with them because their choices are wonderful. They do a combination of things.
Okay.
They audition people, and they also just make offers to certain talent whose work that they know. And that's kind of nice to know that there are options. It's not just offer only. They also do send out auditions and let the talent pool in general take a shot at these roles. So they picked some really nice people for various characters. I love Emily's performance as Shay. And Emily, I had only met once or twice before when I was guest directing a class. And that's how I knew her. And luckily, there she showed up at a session in front of me where somebody else had cast her for a show that I was directing.
Wow.
But the other thing is, guys, that I want to talk about a little bit is I always prefer ensemble record, meaning I like the actors all to be there at the same time. And the reason for that is manyfold. First of all, it goes faster. Mm-hmm. Second of all, you don't have to get as many takes of every line, because what you do is you play a scene. And actor one talks to actor two, actor three chimes in, actor four chimes in, you go back to actor one, and you run, say, a 15-line scene. And then you assess and you say, you know what, let's play this a little bit differently. You guys are a little bit closer together in proximity, so it doesn't have to be as projected. Let's run the whole scene again. And then you run the scene the second time. And then the producers have some input, and maybe somebody else has some input. And then you run the scene a third time. And essentially, at that point, you pretty much know if you have it or not. When you're recording actors individually, which often happens because of their availability or for whatever reasons you have to record them separately from everybody else, you have to do so many more takes to make sure that whatever the actor before them and the actor after them does, their take will fit in.
Gotcha.
And so, do you understand what I'm saying? So that when you don't have the actors together, you have to record many more takes of every single line to make sure that you have all the options in case the guy before them was very quiet. You need a quiet take from the actor. If they were speaking about like this, you have to get a take like that. If they were talking to each other as if they were across the room for each other, you have to get that take too. And then you have to deal with all the attitudes. Is the actor before being snippy? And would my response be clipped? Is the actor's line before kind? And would my response be friendly and kind? In a perfect world, I have enough time to rehearse the actors all together in the room and then go right into the recording session and record them right after. That's in a perfect world. That hardly ever happens. But when it does, it's joyous.
Okay.
You answered a lot of my questions in that one response, and thank you for that.
So you don't mind if we require you to answer your questions three different ways and very distinct and different ways, right?
Happy to.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. But I did want to let a lot of the fans here know that if they want to see you in something, they can actually go and look at your Emmy Awards that are sitting behind you in that documentary, I Know That Voice.
That's right. Somebody gave me a hard time online about the fact that I was sitting there in front of my Emmys. They said something about my ego. And I thought, it wasn't my choice. The director of that piece said, well, this is a pretty good place to set you, is right in front of your Emmys. And I didn't want anybody to think that I set that up that way because I have an ego about them. I'm so proud to have earned every one of those Emmys. I'm so proud to be nominated for Emmys. And so, but that film is a wonderful film. And anybody who's interested in knowing about the world of voiceover should watch it. John DiMaggio put together a remarkable group of people to work on that project. And it gives you a true insight into the world of voiceover from professionals who actually get paid to do it. And so I'm glad you mentioned that because it's a wonderful film. And people, if they choose to see me, they can also see me on a lot of the DC Warner Brothers direct-to-video projects. I'm often in the extra content, and so they can catch me on that as well.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of that extra content because obviously I have to do it as research for the next thing coming up, because they always put like the next movie,
right?
You know, behind the scenes stuff, you know, because they have it already prepared when they bring out the DVDs for the previous movie.
That's right. That's right. So you've gotten to see many of the different hairstyles and makeup styles of Andrea Romano over the seasons.
Well, that's right. That's right. You started out actually as an actress first.
Correct.
Right? And then you became an agent for like June Foray and Frank Welker and other people like that.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Amazing. And so you got to see this from the ground up, and then you became this voiceover director, you know, legend. But it took it took a while for that to develop over the years since like 1989, right?
Right. Well, there was a little step there that you missed. So I was an actress first, and then I was a voiceover agent's assistant, and then I became franchised and became a voiceover agent. And then from 1984 to 89, I was the casting director at Hanna-Barbera. Right. And that was a key learning period for me, not just in learning the general talent in Los Angeles, but because my mentor and the voice director at Hanna-Barbera was the brilliant Gordon Hunt.
Wow.
I learned so much from him. And all of us, I mean, he spawned an enormous group of voice directors. Ginny McSwain worked with Gordon for years. As a matter of fact, I replaced Ginny as the casting director in 1984 when she went off to direct for Marvel. And Chris Zimmerman also worked with Gordon Hunt and still does for years and years. She worked with him. And so Colette Sunderman worked with him, I think, for a while. So many of us voice directors worked with Gordon Hunt and learned a lot about the way to get a good actor is to treat them with kindness and respect. And that gets you a remarkable performance because then the actor is on your side. And they know that you are there to help them and not to fight with them. You're there to get the best possible performance from them. And that's what Gordon Hunt taught us all. And I make a commitment to every actor who works with me. And that commitment is, I will never let your voice go out there sounding bad. I will stay with you. We will work until we're all happy with a performance that will make you happy to hear. And that's key. You don't want anyone to leave the session saying, oh, man, that was really not good. I was not good in that. I will not let an actor go out there sounding bad.
Yeah, I wish I could say the same about you. I'm sitting here on Skype with you trying to record off of Skype, and it's not perfect, I got to tell you.
Yeah. No worries.
I mean, the ideal situation obviously would be to be in Los Angeles with you and recording this live.
Yes, absolutely. I will set a blanket offer to you that when you know you're coming in town, please reach out to us. And if there is a session that we can invite you to, it will be our pleasure to do so.
Goodness. Thank you.
Okay. And especially with this, I want to lead that into for these Voltron actors that you've been working with. We've already pushed through one season that's already out on Netflix. And that was an amazing season. And we want to thank you for that.
My pleasure.
And then we also want to ask, is there anything different going on through this second round with these talented actors?
There is so much really cool stuff happening in these subsequent seasons. And of course, I can't, you know, divulge right. any important information. Nice try. Nice try.
No, that's okay.
But what I truly can tell you, I was very proud of first season, we'll call it, that is now currently available to watch. We have so surpassed that. You know, that season is a variable term because it used to be a very clear term when there were networks and we were doing 13 and 26 episode series seasons.
Right.
Now,
right.
with Netflix and Amazon and all different ways that things, content can be viewed, we may make what we call season that's 26 episodes, but Netflix may only drop 13 episodes and call that a season. So know that there's plenty of Voltron excitement coming. And every single season surpasses the previous one. And I have to give full shout out credit to the writers whom I've worked with for years and years back on Avatar and The Legend of Korra. As a matter of fact, the majority of this production crew worked together on The Legend of Korra as well as Avatar The Last Airbender. And so we've all kind of got this wonderful attitude of, let's not just make a cartoon, let's make an epic cartoon. And
wow.
That's what I think we've done both with those other two series and with Voltron. And I have to tell you guys, when they came to me and said, Andrea, you know, and this was all a group of people that I had known and worked with for years, and they said, we'd like you to voice direct this series, Voltron. And I said, you guys, I'm aware of the series from the past. I don't know it well enough to tell you if I'm the perfect fit. Can I come over and meet with you guys will you tell me the story of Voltron, and then let's go from there. So I went over to DreamWorks, and there's all my friends sitting in a room. And I said to Joaquin, I said, Joaquin, pitch this show to me as if I were a network, as if I knew nothing about this series. It was a brand new show, never had been made before. Joaquin, what is this series, Voltron, that you want to make? What is this show? And so Joaquin sat with me and the rest of the production crew and described the show that is Voltron, the original show, as well as the show they wanted to make. The story of these paladins, of these mechanical lions that form together into this giant robot that is 20 times more powerful than the individual commence, and who fight whatever evil is out there in the universe and needs to be dealt with. And when he told me how it broke down, I said to him, how was this ever sold back when it was first made? Because as a concept, it sounds so strange. It's like, how could that possibly work? And yet it worked back then. And it works wonderfully now. And I have to give the writers and the producers tremendous credit for updating the stories, for making a show that is still pertinent and is loved by the fans of the first incarnation of Voltron, and is also embraced by people who have never seen Voltron before and who are now watching the new series. It's a great thing to be able to work on a series that has appeal from the original series and for those fans of the original series, as well as new fans who were completely unfamiliar with the original series and now are meeting Voltron for the first time.
Right, right.
I've often felt that every Voltron series or every new take on an existing property needs to be something that will appeal to anyone, in particular people who have never seen any prior version of that story. It's such an amazing thing to see this new series paint that classic tale in such a new and appealing way to people, again, like you said, who have seen and enjoyed the original show and remember it with great fondness, and then this new generation who might never have heard of Voltron until today. And it's just remarkable to see how it seems to have struck a chord with so many people.
That's lovely to hear you say that. We were nervous about reviews that were coming in from the fans. We thought, what if they don't like it? What if they're not going to embrace it? And we were so fortunate that almost every review that came in, whether it was from whatever format, however they found their way to us, whatever forum they had to speak to us, they were all so complimentary. There were very few bad reviews, professional reviews and personal reviews. Everybody seemed to embrace it, and they were so happy that we had honored the original series as well as polished and used the technology that we have to get better sound, to get better animation, a larger pool of talent to cast from. You know, back when Voltron was originally made, 100 people making a living doing voiceover for animation, making a living, I mean, solely from doing voiceover. Mm-hmm. Now there's probably 5,000 people making a living doing voiceover.
Right.
And so the talent pool now is just plain far larger. We can cast a far larger net. And you must also remember that years ago, and I can tell you this having been an agent, it was very hard to get on-camera actors to agree to do voiceover. For them, it was a step down. It was, oh, no, it's like doing commercials. Oh, no, we're not going to do commercials. We're theatrical. And now, of course, everybody's asking their agents, please find me an animated project. Please find me a commercial account, because the paradigm has changed. Everybody wants to do voiceover. They suddenly discover it doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter if you're in your pajamas. As long as your voice is warmed up and you can act the part, it's a lot less trying than on-camera work. There's no memorization. There's really silly fun to be had. So there's many, many more actors doing voiceover now. So the DreamWorks casting department could cast a much larger net in trying to find actors to work on this series.
Okay. What we have found is that there's a lot of the fans that are just, you know, becoming aware of the original series and the series that followed it based on listening to our podcast. And, you know, we've covered it all, you know, pretty much over the last 3 years.
Excellent.
But the amount of new fans based on this new show is overwhelming compared to what we had before.
How wonderful. You've been doing this podcast for 3 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good for you. Good for you. And was it because you knew that there was a Voltron series coming up, or just because you were Voltron fans in the first place?
Well, what had inspired it for me was the series that came out in 2011 called Voltron Force, which was on Nicktoons. And it wasn't actually until 2 years after that came out that we started the podcast.
Gotcha.
So there was really nothing going on in Voltron world at the time that we started the podcast, and we found that there were a lot of fans out there still longing for something new to come from Voltron.
Isn't that great?
Yes.
How wonderful.
So when we heard that DreamWorks had bought Classic Media, and that included Voltron, and we heard from the World Events Productions, the owners of Voltron, that DreamWorks was really excited about having Voltron as a property that they could do things with, that we knew that there was something good coming on the horizon, but we didn't know it was going to include voice director Andrea Romano.
Well, I'll tell you, I was so thrilled that they reached out to me. I am very, very happy to be a part of the series. I'm so proud of everybody's work. I never cease to be amazed at how beautiful the series looks. You know, we're all kind of tunnel vision as far as our own work. I get very focused on the voiceover work, and I want it to be as wonderful as we can make it. And because, again, as I said before, we do the voices first, and then they take that off and animate for however many months to a year it may take. So it's a very long wait period until we get to see what that work looks like. And why it's so crucial that we get a good cast and a good recording track is that dialogue track drives the animation directors. So whatever they get as the vocal track helps them animate. And so I work with actors trying to get as full a performance as I can that also honors the physical action that will be taking place. So if these guys are thrusting forward, we have to make sure that that energy is in the dialogue, because that's how that will be animated. If they're talking like this, to fix it later in ADR, automatic dialogue replacement. When we go fix it in ADR, that's not nearly as organic as getting initial performance from the very beginning initial record. The more full and, forgive me, but animated we can get the vocal tracks from the beginning, the more the animators are going to have to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's why I like the ensemble record, where everybody's off of each other, each other's energy. And when a scene builds, you can actually do that when the actors are together. Tell me, I want to know some of the guests that you guys listened to on the first season that you guys have watched. Who were some of the guests that you were impressed with, that you were inspired by?
Well, you had Scott Wolf, right?
I don't know. Oh, yeah, Scott Wolf, of course. Oh, my God, yes. Scott Wolf, yes. Wonderful.
Right? And the guy from The Walking Dead, I'm sorry.
Norman Reedus.
Norman Reedus. Yeah, Norman Reedus.
Wonderful. Wasn't he terrific?
Yes, he was.
And, you know, we weren't even in the same city. I think he was in Atlanta when we recorded him. And so we had to do it via ISDN.
Oh.
And I always prefer at least to be able to see the actor, so that, because there's physical actions that I can look at them and do a physical, you know, motion with my hands or my face or my arms and sort of give them the physical action. You have to do more describing when you're doing long distance ISDN record. But he totally came through, absolutely understood the character, and was just terrific.
Yeah. And you had Lacey Chabert that played Naima.
So sweet. And I think she's probably had her baby by now. She was due last time we recorded.
Wow. Huh.
And yes, some other wonderful actors in that. I wish I had the list in front of me. specifically about, but I don't have it. But there were some remarkable people who came in. There are some wonderful guest stars coming in these next seasons. It's so exciting what's coming up. I think you guys will be totally thrilled, and I think the fans will be just delighted. And what I love, too, is that the opening credits don't tell you who the guests are. You have to get all the way through the episode to find out who was the voice of.
Yes.
And yeah. There's actors who I think people go, no, who was that? I recognize that. Oh my goodness, that's so and so.
Well, we actually have been doing episode reviews that are very much transcript in nature.
Yeah, I'd say so.
All right, so we go through the whole thing and we say who the additional voices were at the end.
Oh, how great!
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for that.
One thing that we don't like, though, is the fact that they put Neil Kaplan and Cree Summer as additional voices. I really think that their performances are key to the whole story, and I think they should be put in the same area as the regular actors.
Are they not credited with their character names?
No, it puts Cree Summer and Neil Kaplan in as additional voices, and I mean, come on, we're talking about Zarkon and Hagar here.
I totally agree with you. Now, these may be episodes where they weren't, their roles weren't huge, but I can't tell you that I understand that. I never noticed that. And I that should be corrected. And I will actually speak to the producers on that. So
yes.
Thank you for bringing that up. No, they should get full credit. They should get full credit for that.
And the next time we get a voice cast at like New York Comic Con or San Diego Comic Con or something like that, we want to have Neil and Cree there, you know, because they are a critical part of the villainy.
I agree. Absolutely. Yeah. They do such a good job, both of them. They really do. They work really hard and they do really good work. And so they should be a part of it. And I had no idea about that other thing. So thank you for telling me.
Yeah. We had Neil Kaplan on here and he actually did I'm a Little Teapot as Zarkon.
What a funny idea. I love that.
Yeah. It was awesome.
It was actually one of the fans that had asked for it. They said, "Can you say something silly as your character?"
Oh, that's great.
That was fun. I wanted to touch on something very, very quickly. You had mentioned that the reviews for Voltron Legendary Defender had been so overwhelmingly positive. I wanted to just comment on how rare that is. You know, I have observed numerous times in numerous fandoms for various franchises that if something isn't exactly like a lot of people remember it being, people discard it. I mean, right. And I don't mean a majority of fans, but a very vocal minority of fans just speak out against anything that deviates in any way from what they might remember from decades ago. And that this new series has been embraced seemingly, I mean, not universally, but so close to it. It's a real testament to the work that everyone on that program has done. It's such a rare thing. I mean, you see the live action Transformer films and how many fans rant and rave about it in a negative way, or the newer Star Wars films, the new right. Star Trek films, you know, so you guys have done an absolutely phenomenal job.
Very, very kind of you to say that. And it absolutely is true. It's very rare because you're right. People, for some reason, and you're right, it's a small group usually, but they're very verbal and very vocal about it. They want the original. And our point was not to remake the original, you know, to move it forward, to move it into this decade, to move it into a world that kids today would want to watch. And so thank you for those kind words. And thank you, fans, for embracing the series the way you have. Everybody who works on this show works really hard, as you can see by what's on the screen and what you hear on the screen. Everybody puts their best foot forward and is willing to work extra. And I'm astounded at how beautiful it looks. And we had the great good fortune when the first few episodes were first mixed, which means they were completed. The vocal effects, the vocal track, the picture, the sound effects, the music, everything was all married together and put together. And DreamWorks very kindly offered the cast and myself to come over to their beautiful facility on their lot and watch the first three episodes on their gorgeous big screen with their beautiful sound system. And I have to tell you, it could have been a feature. Those first three episodes that constitute the pilot are such beautifully animated projects that they could have been a feature. And that's not always true. When you work on a project that's really good for the internet, when you put it on a huge screen, a huge theatrical screen, you can see every flaw, every problem. This was seamless. This was beautiful. When we watched this pilot on this huge screen, all I could think was, it's a shame that our fans aren't getting to watch this in that same kind of enormous facility. But to hear this and see these gorgeous images.
Well, Greg, you've even said that, you know, the place of a live action movie, which is a lot of Voltron fans want to see a live action movie of Voltron. You said that you would prefer actually to keep Voltron animated and have that as a gigantic movie.
Well, yeah. I mean, I for one think that there are certain, and again, would I embrace and enjoy a live action film? Absolutely. But the animated format is something that I think works for more fantastic properties like Voltron, you know, where, you know, you're doing the incredible, the amazing as a matter of course. I mean, you know, everything about Voltron, except for the stories now, at least the humanity in these stories, everything is larger than life. And what better medium for that than animation?
I agree with you. I'm so happy to hear you say that. We've all seen animated projects that we've loved and embraced for years that then were made into live action films that somehow disappointed us. And I would hate for that to happen to Voltron. And I feel the same way as you. I would be delighted to see a live action Voltron. It would cost a fortune.
Yes.
The special effects would be so massive. The animation is such fantasy. When you watch Voltron being formed, they have worked out the mechanics of that so that it actually makes sense. It's not fantasy anymore. That claw moves into another piece of mechanical equipment and locks in with a clank, and you know that those two pieces are not going to separate unless something acts upon it. There's such science in all of that, and it's so realistic and wonderful. And I'd hate to lose the fantasy aspect of the animation. And so I would love to see, and I think Voltron is the perfect contender for a big fat feature animated.
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
I'd love to see
and
that.
You had mentioned that there's a lot of science involved in there, but I always thought that the best thing about Voltron was its balance of magic and science.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what makes it.
Because you've got Hagar on the evil side, who's, you know, conjuring up all kinds of magic. And then you've got the good side with, like, Allura and the Altaians and, you know, everything that they have that, you know, you just can't comprehend. Where does this come from?
Right. Right. Yeah. And that's a nice combination, I think, because it's a little something for everybody.
Yeah. And I have to say, I've mentioned this in previous podcasts, but I am enamored with the performance of Cree Summer as Hagar. I mean, her presence in the series, you know, she's not as not featured as heavily as many of the other characters, but that performance is really, really particularly strong in the few lines that she gets in a typical episode. And I'm so looking forward to seeing more of her character in the future.
I'm going to tell her you said that. She'll be so pleased. And I agree. That's the trick, too, is to become somehow remain in people's minds with so few lines per episode. As you said, she does not have a lot of dialogue. As a matter of fact, we joked about the fact that there's one episode that's coming up where she has one word. That's all she has in the entire episode. One word.
Wow.
But she manages to captivate. And that credits the actress a lot with acting. And visuals are so beautiful for her character. And as you said, there's that combination, very flowing magics are involved with the Hagar character. And the very sort of concrete mechanics and science of Voltron. And then what gets added to the mix that's really beautiful are another wonderful aspect that sort of fits into the whole here is the wonderful personality of the Paladins or of Allura or of Karan. They're all so different. And so you've got these backgrounds of magics and sorcery and then another bunch of sciencey mechanical backgrounds. And then you have all these personalities that have to fit into all of those backgrounds, if you will. And so Hunk is kind of, you know, brawny and kind of goofy. And yet at the same time, he is probably one of the smartest scientists on board.
Yeah.
And then you have Pidge, who has a lot of her own issues and what's going on with her character and her family and her desire to find her family. We've got Shiro, who's the leader, but does he really want to be the leader? You've got Keith, who's got all kinds of issues. Who am I forgetting?
Lance.
Oh, my God. Lance, who I love so much. And he's just so, you know, you think he's very one-dimensional. You think, oh, he's just about himself and he's just about wanting chicks and girls. And then you find out he really is a very fully developed character. And on a very silly side note, I have to tell you guys and the fans who will be listening that one of the funniest moments is Rhys Darby is not available to record with us. And Jeremy will do the voice of Lance, will do a very funny New Zealand accent that sounds just like Rhys Darby. And so,
well, he did that at WonderCon, you know.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad he did. Because it's just hilarious to hear him do his Koran impression.
Yes.
And so yeah. I told him the last episode, I said, you have to be careful because Rhys is now working on his Lance impression. So careful. It would only be fair if he came up with a really good Lance.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That would be awesome. All right. So while we're talking about the actors, can we go into a deep dive with each of them? And you can tell us how they brought this character to life and what it meant for this show.
Absolutely. Run them by me one by one.
All right. Let's start with Josh.
Josh. I've worked with Josh on many projects and, you know, he's so versatile and so talented. And every once in a while you get to work with someone who is cast in a role that they understand so well that the biggest part of my job as a voice director is to just get the heck out of his way and not mess with him and let him do what he does. He understands the hero aspect of this character, where it's not an overplayed hero. He's not Superman. He's not Batman. He's not Green Lantern. He's not any of these. He's not Spider-Man. He's not any of those characters. He's human without any superpowers. He has this remarkable device with Lion and this ability to form Voltron. And how cool is it that he gets to say form Voltron? He loves that.
Yeah.
But he understands the human side of this character as well as the leader side of this character. And so we sometimes have to just mess a little bit with, here's where you have to be a little bit more sensitive, and here's where you have to let that sensitivity go to get the team to work together. Every leader can't be so sensitive to everybody's needs because then they'll fall apart. At some point, they just have to say, we're doing this, get on board, without losing their humanity. And Josh does a beautiful job.
I've often found that the leader in a show like this with a team of heroes, the leader is probably the hardest role to sell because, you know, you have all your other characters with their shades of gray and all this, and the leader certainly tends to be a three-dimensional character, but the leader is the one that usually has the least scruples and has to be on the straight and narrow and has to keep the team on the straight and narrow. And I think that that's a difficult sell to make a character seem multifaceted and three-dimensional while still being this, you know, almost Superman-like hero in terms of morals and ethics. And what are your thoughts on that?
I totally agree with you. It's very difficult. And that's why they needed an actor as Josh is in order to pull that off. And you're absolutely right. And what he brings to it is history. And now I don't quiz the actors and say, okay, tell me the background of your character. Tell me what your relationship. I let them work that out themselves. What I can tell, however, is if they have done that homework or not. And Josh clearly has done that homework. He has all that background figured out. And so when he speaks with a history. that character has had some history, and we don't have to know exactly what all that is. It just informs his performance. So when he speaks to Lance, he speaks to Lance differently than when he speaks to Keith.
Right.
When he speaks to Allura, he speaks to her differently than he will to Pidge. He's worked out his relationship with each of these characters. And again, without having to vocalize that, without having to verbalize that, without having to tell me what that is, Josh acts it. And so that's a really good aspect of acting that you really want in an actor playing that kind of role. It's very difficult. It's very thankless. And they don't show their, what, their indecision, their darker sides. But that has to exist in the character, and the actor has to be able to tap into that. And ideally, throughout the series, you'll get to see that more and more.
All right. Do you also like the fact that both Josh and his character together, they're now being called Space Dad across the whole fandom?
I did not know this, and I couldn't.
You didn't know this?
No, and that's lovely.
Yes, they are calling Josh Space Dad, and they are calling Shiro Space Dad, both of them at the same time.
Great. I'm sure he knows.
Oh, yeah, he's embraced it.
I think it's great. It's terrific.
All right, so next let's go to Allura, who's Kimberly Brooks.
Kim Brooks I've worked with for years and years and years, and I'll tell you what I admire so much about Kimberly. They were having a very hard time casting this role. They had tried many British actresses who did not have to work on the accent, obviously, but they couldn't get exactly what they were looking for. They would find a wonderful actress, but she sounded too young, or she had too much rasp, or whatever. What they found in Kimberly was exactly the right age, exactly the right actress, but she was really having a hard time with the dialect. She wasn't consistent. Sometimes the accent would slip into lower class British. I suggested, because I know several dialecticians, that she worked with an actor named J.B. Blanc, who is an actor and a director and a voiceover actor and a really fine man and a dialectician. And so she spent weeks and weeks and weeks working with him. And you can hear over the first couple of episodes, you can hear her dialect get better and better and better as she worked with him over the weeks. And that's really commendable because Kimberly is an established voice actress. She has many established credits to her name. And for an actress like that to say, I need help with the dialect, and to take the time and effort to be privately coached with the specific dialogue from the episodes so that she could learn how to say those words consistently the same way, because those words, some words will show up over and over and over again. And you don't want her to say it one way in one episode and say it differently in a second episode and say it a third way in a third episode. You want it to be consistent, right, and you want it to be accurate. Mm-hmm. And so I love the fact that she was willing as an established actress to go back to school and learn how to get this dialect down.
She's just amazing.
Isn't she lovely in the role? I think she sounds just like the character looks.
Yes, we interviewed her, and she was extremely lovely on the podcast with us as well.
Absolutely. Wonderful.
That character also is very difficult because aside from having to have the strength of a princess and a ruler, she has to have a real vulnerability, someone whom everybody wants to help, whom everybody wants everything to come out right for her. She really is, to me, kind of the driving force. She's what everybody is working for. She controls the Castle of Lions. She's the touchstone for everybody. They all come back. She's kind of the mom in a way, but because she's so young and beautiful and needs the assistance of all these characters, she's sometimes the damsel in distress. And that's kind of a nice role too.
Yeah, I've often felt in revisiting Voltron as an adult that Princess Allura had arguably the most potential to be developed into a wonderful character from her somewhat two-dimensional roots. And I really think that Kimberly Brooks does a great job of selling this new and far more deep character than we've had previously.
I'm so glad you think so. I think she's lovely.
We're going to do a little bit of a switch over to the villain side real quick. Okay. And we're going to start with Neil Kaplan as Zarkon.
Isn't Neil Kaplan's voice great as Zarkon? It just absolutely nails the evil, that wonderful depth And what I love about the role, too, is when we were first working on it, Neil's temptation to move through the dialogue relatively quickly. But I feel so great about that character of Zarkon is he is so sure of himself that he can kind of take his time, his leisurely time, in anything he wants to say. And that's what I think Neil does, is really kind of languishes in his evil wickedness. And he's got that depth in his voice. And he absolutely now takes the time to enjoy the thinking process of going through. You know, it's very evil to just play a bad guy as a bad guy. But you need to find out why. Why is he so evil? What happened? And so there's some homework that has to be done and some research that has to be done. And there's also some research in what the new producers of this new series are planning to do with this character. You know, you mm-hmm. never know. Is the bad guy going to turn good? Is the good guy going to turn bad? Is there something we don't know that's going to be a twist in the middle of the season? And is that something set up early on? And so you kind of do that kind of research and that kind of homework. But Neil is so willing, game, to do whatever we need him to do to make the character be right. And that goes a really long way when you're working with an actor who's like, I'll do the take 15 times if you want to get the nuance that you're looking for, to get whatever it is you're looking for. I'll stay, and I'll work it until it's absolutely right. His willingness to do the work is remarkable.
And one thing about an evil character like Zarkon is that they don't have to raise their voice. They don't have to get emotional. They can just keep steady and silent. And they're just as evil as they can possibly be at that point.
And then that makes those few times when they do raise their voice so much more poignant.
Yeah.
An actor playing an evil character plays him loud and angry all the time. There's no place to go from there. If they play the character quiet and taking their time and full of themselves, so full of ego that when they do get loud, when they do lose their temper, when they do shout, it's all the more poignant.
Right.
I agree. I think James Earl Jones as Darth Vader is far more effective in The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi than he was in the original film, right. In part because in the original film, he does get more emotional. I recall him saying, tear the ship apart until you found those plans and blah, 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 blah. And when you hear him emoting that much over something that relatively insignificant, it kind of sells the character short. But in The Empire Strikes Back, he's very level-headed about even trying to turn his son to the dark side. And right. When he does emote, it really packs a punch. And I agree with you.
Me too.
Okay, cool. Let's move back to the Paladins and let's talk about Lance, who was played by Jeremy Shada.
Jeremy is so sweet. You know, I've known him for a very long time, since he was very, very young. He was one of my Robins in one of the Batman incarnations. He played Robin, young Robin for me years ago. And the truth of it is, even as young as he still is, and I'm guessing he's mid-20s now, he's such a good, experienced actor that, again, an actor that I pretty much get out of his way. He's so good. He knows what the right reading is. He knows what the right acting is. And he listens to the actors around him and reacts, which is such a big part of acting, reacting. Because you could be on your own page and just do what you think is right. But if you don't listen to the actor who's speaking before you and react off of what they've given you, then you're not really in the scene. And he's awesome at listening to what the actor before him does and then reacting off of that and making it a very organic, combined scene that makes sense.
Right. What about the Lance character makes Jeremy the perfect role for that?
What Jeremy has going for him is, even though he's mid-20s, he still sounds far younger, and he doesn't have to squeeze his voice or pinch to make it sound young. He just thinks younger and it comes out the right age. And so that's a wonderful part of the natural Jeremy that works really well.
That's pretty cool. All right, let's switch over to Tyler Labine as Hunk.
Tyler is so great. He's one of those actors who is absolutely right for the role. And while he had to learn a lot about acting versus acting, and there are some very simple, basic things. Like, because of the way anime is made, you can't overlap the actor speaking before you. You must let the actor finish their line, and then you come in with your line. Now, if you're playing a scene theatrically on camera, you almost always overlap. You jump in on, and when we speak in conversations, we overlap all the time. Purely for animation purposes, we must let the actor before finish their line, and then you record your line, and then we may edit it such that they do ultimately overlap in the finished product. But actors who work on camera a lot tend to jump on the other actor's lines. So before Jeremy might have finished his line, Tyler will be in starting his line. So he had to learn that kind of technical aspect of acting. Acting, he's a really good actor, and he understands this character so well. He knows that he's a bit of the comic relief, but he also knows that this is not a dumb character. He's actually a very scientifically smart character, but he also knows how to time it so that he gets the optimum laugh for the line that he's doing. He's terrific.
My favorite was when he knew he was right about, Rollo and Naima being,
right.
The bad guys and everything, and he knew that they were leading them astray and all that kind of stuff. And when he finally got to voice his anger about it, as he was as he was climbing into his own cockpit and everything, and everybody was like, "Yeah, we get it."
Absolutely, but here's the commendable thing for all these characters. There's something sympathetic about each and every one of them. You know, you've got Lance, who's all about ego, can be all about ego, but you still like him a lot.
Yeah.
You've got, Pidge, who's really kind of a scientific know-it-all, but you like her so much. You know, you've got, all these characters that you have this sympathetic feeling towards, and that's key. It's crucial to keep the fans liking the whole show. Because everybody's got to have something that you relate to. Every character has to have something that you say, I understand why they are that way. I like the fact that they have that foible, that they have that fault, that they have that problem, that they had that something that we all have. And each and every one of these actors brings that to each character.
All right, let's talk about Pidge, Bex Taylor-Klaus.
Love her so much. When I found out she'd been cast in the series and I was going to get to direct her, I was so excited. I had seen her work in House of Lies, right? I always get them confused. House of Lies, House of Cards.
I don't know which one it is.
I don't either, unfortunately.
I think it's House of Lies.
Okay.
And she's playing a character who was a friend of Don Cheadle's son. And Don Cheadle's son likes to dress wildly, let's just say. And so he's got this friend. And as I see Bex in this role, I'm looking at Bex and I'm saying, now I can't tell if that's a girl or a boy character. And then we find out that she really is a girl dressing as a boy. This is in House of Lies. And so then I see this character of Pidge and I realize, well, no wonder they've cast her, because when you listen, the voice, you go, she kind of sounds like an adolescent boy. And then every once in a while, the female side sneaks through and you go, no, is that a boy's voice or is that a girl? And that's so perfect for Pidge, because she is a girl pretending to be a boy. And so I thought it worked out perfectly. And when we get the reveal, it makes total sense. She's a lovely actress, so talented. And she brings this natural enthusiasm to the character that's just absolutely contagious. She, when she runs into the room, when she comes in to first record, she practically leaps into my arms and gives me a hug because she's so happy to be there. She's so happy to be working on this project and so happy to be playing in this room filled with creative, talented people. And she's just a joy to work with, just absolutely a joy.
I thought her performance, it's always been strong in this series, but the episode where she's in the castle pretty much by herself and trying to reclaim it from Sendak and the other Galra, and she's going through, you see these flashback scenes of, you know, how she's gotten to be where she is today, you know, her family and where she's come from and how they disappeared and how she's had to react and try to learn more about them. It's just that episode is such just a great showcase for her talents. She's just amazing.
Exactly. Showcase was exactly the word I was going to use. And we have to give credit to the writers and for the way that they put that episode together as far as, you know, you're exactly right. Seeing where she is now and what brought her to that point and those flashbacks that are so human and things that we can all relate to, whether it's loss or whatever it is. And then watching her trying to pull it together so that she can continue on with the mission and get it all done. I thought she was wonderful in that episode. It really was a tour de force for her.
Okay, let's switch over to Steven Yeun as Keith.
Steven is one of the most enthusiastic actors I've ever worked with. Steven, I worked with on, I think The Legend of Korra was the first time I worked with him. And he had such a good time. And we always say to people that we enjoy working with, come play with us again. And Steven said, absolutely, please invite me back to come and play again. So this is a good 4 years ago, 5 years ago, maybe. And obviously, we kept him in mind. And he auditioned, which is so lovely to have these actors who have major careers audition for these roles. And Steven is someone who he will do 20 takes of a line until he's satisfied. And we may all, as producers, actors, have been satisfied at take five, but he'll continue 15 more takes until he is satisfied. And we're fine. We're glad to do it, happy to do it. And his sophistication as far as the options for how many ways a line can be played is remarkable. So he'll look at it from every different direction and want a shot at all of those different directions. At some point, we have to stop and just say, okay, we've got to make a decision so we can move forward with the scene. But he has the ability to play a scene 10 different ways and is willing to do it. And that's, my goodness, that's such an abundance of options. It's so lovely to have that kind of excess.
Doesn't that make it harder for the directors and the producers to then choose which one to take?
Yes, yes. But what a wonderful difficulty.
Right.
It's like walking into a closet and saying, I have 15 different outfits I could wear today and they're all good. And so that's a lovely dilemma. Which one do I choose?
Right.
It is more work, but it's a lovely bit of work. And I love the fact that he will not step away from the microphone until he feels like he's given the best possible read for that scene. And that's just lovely. My goodness. And he's such a busy actor, and we're so lucky to get him as often as we get him. And when they can work together in the room, you guys, it's such a joy to watch these actors all. First of all, they love each other.
Yeah.
They love being together in the room. We can record a 22 episode in about 2.5 hours if they're all there together.
Wow.
When we have to record them separately or in small groups or whatever, combined time for a 22-minute episode is probably closer to 6 hours.
Wow.
Of time, because you have to record so many different options, so many different things and stuff. So, yeah. So it's lovely when they're all together. And I hope that at some point in the future, DreamWorks will invite us to attend some Comic-Con where we can do a table read for you.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Wouldn't it
be great? Please put that out there, you guys. You have the forum to do that.
Yes.
I would really love for them to invite us to one of the big ones, one of the big cons,
yeah,
and do a table read, because that's the time when you get to mess around and have the characters screw up, and also to watch the way they react to each other. It's quite remarkable.
Yes.
I bet.
All right, let's go to Cree Summer as Hagar.
Great. Cree is an actress that I have known since before Tiny Toon Adventures. She was Elmira for me on the Tiny Toon Adventures. So she and I have worked together for probably 30 plus years. And I never cease to be amazed at the variety of characters that she can play and how she can portray a character and give us a very full character with very few lines of dialogue. And what we will learn about this character is remarkable. There's a huge history that you guys are going to learn about this character in seasons to come.
Okay.
Very exciting character. And she's just great. She can go from 1 to 100 in a second. And so to watch her just go from a very kind of quiet, contained performance to absolutely out of her mind, insane, when it's called for, is just stunning. She's just a wonderful actress. And there's so much to look forward to in the seasons to come for that character, as far as where that character goes to and why she is the way she is because of what has happened in her past.
I am so looking forward to that.
All right. Last but not least, Rhys Darby as Corran.
I am so excited to work with Rhys Darby. I'm a huge Flight of the Conchords fan. And I knew that the show needed some comic relief. And when I saw that that was the way they chose to go, I was so delighted because Rhys has the ability to be crazy silly. I mean, truly giggly silly. And there are some reads that he will do on lines that none of us would ever have imagined that that would be the way that that line could be read. And they are so funny and so novel. And when Rhys records with the cast, a tremendous amount of time has to be spent waiting for the cast to stop laughing. Because he will do a line reading that is so funny that they just cannot stop from laughing. They have to laugh. So we wait for everybody to get the laughs out, and then we do another take. His instincts are so off the wall and appropriate and funny and silly. And the pitch that he can get to, where his voice goes incredibly, and then also down to a very nice, beautiful range. And his sympathy for Allura and his loyalty to Allura and his ability to be freaked out by all these things that happen around him make for a most wonderful character. And I'm so delighted, and we are so lucky to have him on the series. He's also, every one of these actors are incredibly busy. The fact that we are to get them to come in and record for us, we are blessed. We are so lucky that they're all able to give us the time we need to make this series. It's remarkable.
I loved him in the recent X-Files, you know, reunion, the 6-episode revival they did recently. He was prominently featured in one of the early episodes, and he played this creature in a human guise, and you never quite knew until the very end if he was really a creature or if he's just insane. And he pulls that character off so well. Golly.
Well, now I'm going to have to watch that because I haven't seen it. Was that your introduction to Rhys?
Well, no, but it was the first time that I his voice has been familiar to me as I've listened to the show. But when I went back and thought, oh, yeah, very recently I had seen him on TV. And that was the first time I made the connection with Corran.
Got it.
So we had remarked previously on about this Voltron Legendary Defenders show, how it has like the best studio, the best voice actors, the best voice director, and how lucky we are as Voltron fans to have that all come together at the same time with that big production team from the previous shows, Avatar, The Last Airbender, and The Legend of Korra. Just amazing. Studio Mir and everybody involved. We are so lucky as Voltron fans to have you on board with this show.
You're very kind to say that. Thank you. I feel lucky to be a part of it. I really enjoy working on it. I'm so glad they invited me to come and play. Are like playing. The prep may be hard, but once we get in there, I always think of the prep for these recording sessions as the making of the cake. It's the baking, it's procuring all of the elements that you need, all the ingredients, mixing it all together, cooking it, The recording sessions is like the eating of the cake. That's where we get to really have the fun. That's where we get to enjoy. And those recording sessions are absolute parties. They're so much fun. So I do hope that you guys do get the opportunity to come and watch a session record. Of course, you'll have to swear yourselves to secrecy that you won't divulge what happens in the stories, but it would be nice to have you come watch a session.
Wow, that would be an honor.
I would love to do that.
So would I.
And I will sign my life away if you let me do that.
As I said, just let us know when you're coming in town. We'll run it by all the proper channels and we'll get you the okay to come watch.
Wow. That's such a tremendously generous offer. Thank you.
You bet.
And what you've done for us tonight is very generous as well. So I want to thank you for joining us for as long as you did. I know that you didn't have to be here this long, but it was an amazing thing to be able to get this all in for the fans. So thank you very, very much.
My pleasure entirely. Good night, gentlemen.
Activate interlock. Dynathermes connected.
Mega thrusters
occur.
Let's go, Voltron fans. This is your Voltron Fan Spotlight. Greg.
Yes, Mark, what's up?
We received a great response from the listeners about our new segment, the Voltron Fan Spotlight.
Yeah, you know, this was something that you had sprung on me very recently, and I had not heard of this Voltron voice meme thing, but in listening to that first fan spotlight, this was such a cool way to get to know a Voltron fan. So to our newer listeners who might not know what these voice memes are all about, why don't you clue us all in?
So we have another Voltron fan we'd like to share with you who has recorded a Voltron voice meme. And a Voltron voice meme is a bunch of questions that the person records in their own voice, answering those questions about Voltron. So it has a lot to do with the fact that this new show has started, and they wanted to see, you know, if people could give a little bit of information about themselves as a Voltron fan, what they like about this show, some of their favorite characters, if they saw the previous shows, and if they can say some of the words that are part of this new Voltron Legendary Defender show. Some of the listeners asked if they could get a copy of all the questions so they could do their own Voltron voice meme. So we'll include an image with those questions on this podcast's notes page for you so you can do your own.
Sounds like fun. I really get a kick out of listening to these. So the more people that we can spotlight, the better. This is cool.
Yeah, this is going to be a regular segment. So we already did it with Rebecca on the last one. And this time for this podcast, our Voltron voice meme comes from @ThirdJim on Twitter, who hails from Richmond, Virginia in the United States.
Great. Let's hear it.
Okay, I'm doing the Voltron voice meme for the 10th time. I literally just did it and I accidentally deleted it. I don't know how, but yeah, I'm gonna do it. I don't like my voice. Yeah, I said this for the billionth time now. Okay, name and URL slash @. My name is Ren and my URL and @ are the same thing. They're Third Gym. So tell us a little bit about yourself. I am a college student. I'm 19 years old. I'm in my second year. I'm super gay, and I really like Voltron, yeah. How did you get into Voltron? I saw it on Tumblr, and a lot of people were talking about it and talking about it, how great it was. And the art style is really similar to Legend of Korra, and I liked Legend of Korra, so. But I also saw on Tumblr fan art of Clance, and it was really, really cute. So I was really interested to see, like, as of why people would want to ship them and see what their characters were like. So yeah. Had you ever seen any of the earlier shows before watching Legendary Defender? No, but I wish I did, because I tried to watch it now. I watched the first episode and it's not really my thing. I think it's kinda not so great, but I'll watch it one day when I have extra time, I guess. But I'm gonna watch it one day, I promise. Favorite character? Okay. At first, it was a tie between Shiro and Keith, but now I like Keith more. But like out of 100%, it's 40% Shiro and 60% Keith. But as to why I like Keith more is because I'm a lot like his character, I think. And as in, like, his way of thinking and stuff. So, yeah, I usually like characters like him because they're a lot like me. So, yeah. And he's really, really cute. I love him so much. He's my cranky ray of sunshine. Yeah, I love him. What are your ships, if any? My OTP is Sheath. And, yeah, that's it. I really love them, but I don't want to talk about them for many reasons. But I like all the other Voltron ships. Like, I like Clance, I like Hans, I like Schlance. I don't really like any pit ships. It kind of makes me uncomfortable. So, yeah. Oh, but I also love Shiro and Shirocest and Shiro and Zarkon. But I don't really like Shiro and Senback. I don't really know why. But, yeah. What are you hoping to see in future seasons? Okay. I really want more explanations, like, about their backgrounds and what happened to everybody, what was, like, going on with everybody before the Kerberos mission, like, especially with Shiro and Keith, of course. And I really want to know why Keith was kicked out of the garrison and, yeah, just, like, their life in general before becoming the paladins and stuff. But, and also, I can't wait to see how Keith's become the leader of Voltron. I will scream so much if he gets to wear the Black Paladin suit and he gets to ride the Black Lion. That's like the number one thing I want to see so badly. But yeah, I can't wait for season two. I'm dying right now. Okay, favorite episode. My favorite episode has to be the last one because it's so action-packed in such a little tiny episode. And it has the best fights. It has Shiro fighting the Witch Lady. And it has Keith fighting Zarkon. And I love it. Every time Zarkon is like, you fight like a Galra soldier to Keith, I scream every single time. He's an alien. I know he's an alien. Yeah. But I like the second episode too because it's really funny. Yeah. And you get to see all the characters interact, yeah. And in the beginning, so it's really good. Which line would you pilot? This is a hard question because, okay, I would want to pilot the Red Lion because it's the coolest lion, in my opinion. But as in, like, the ones that I would ride because it's very similar, that I'm very compatible with, that's a hard question. Because I'm not really like any of the characters, like, 100% exactly like... Like, I wouldn't fit the description of what the lion is gonna need. The thing that Allura explains to everybody. I'm not, like, a leader like Shiro. I'm not super badass and into my instincts like Keith. I'm a dumbass, so I'm not smart enough to ride the green lion. But maybe the yellow lion, but I'm not super, like, sincere or super nice or whatever, like, hunk. But maybe, or maybe the blue lion only because it never got a description, but probably the yellow lion. Yeah. But I would really want to ride the red lion. Say, Shiro, Keith, Lance, Pidge, Hunk, Allura, Karan, Zarkon, Kerberos, Galra, Arus, Altea, Balmera, and Quintessence. So yeah. My voice is really weird. I'm really done talking now because this is like my 10th time recording and I'm so mad at myself. But yeah. So yeah, Keith is the best. Bye-bye.
Okay, Greg, so what did you think about our Voltron fan spotlight at Third Gym on Twitter? What do you think about her responses to the questions?
I thought it was great. At Third Gym, number one, you are not a dumbass. I heard you mention that. The fact that you put so much thought into the lions, which one you might pilot, and which characters you like, which relationships you like, and all that, and the different things you're looking forward to in season two, it clearly shows you've got a brain up there, and it's ticking, and it's thinking about our mutual favorite show, which is Voltron Legendary Defender. So, you know, welcome to the club of fans worldwide. We're glad to have you as one of our community. So thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us. Number two, as far as a voice sounding funny, everyone's voice sounds funny to them. And that's because, you know, when we hear ourselves talk, we are actually hearing a distorted version of our voices in our own head. You know, where our ears and our mouths are pretty close to each other, so they don't, our voices don't sound the same to us that they do to everyone else. And yes, I, to this day, I've done a lot of recording either for this podcast or various other things, and voices do sound very different to us when we hear an external recording.
Well, but here's, you know, the funny thing.
Yeah, what's that?
Is that when we were younger, we used to record our voices on a tape recorder. So our voices went onto a tape and got played back on a recorder that had a lot of extra air and sounds to it that weren't really part of our voice, but our voices sounded very muffled.
Yeah, yep.
And in today's world, the digital recordings are much better.
Yes, they are. And so, you know, you're hearing your voice very clearly as everyone else does. And it sounds strange to you, no doubt. My voice sounds strange to me. But, you know, everyone is already used to your voice just as it is. And the people who know your voice love your voice. So don't worry about that. And thank you again for sharing your Voltron thoughts with us.
But the whole thing about Keith and the Red Lion, and she thinks that Keith is an alien.
Yeah, you are not alone. There are a lot of people who do.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who are thinking that right now. And
yeah,
also the fact that she doesn't think she would like the original show, but she still says she would go back and see it.
Thank you for having an open mind about that. I mean, each of these Voltron shows is quite different from the others. And that's part of what makes the show, the whole Voltron thing fun for me, is every show has something fun to enjoy. And this show is certainly an amazing series.
So thank you for all your great answers at Third Jim. We want to thank you for being our Voltron fan spotlight for this episode. And Greg, we're going to keep having more of these great Voltron fan spotlights.
Awesome. I'm really enjoying these, so let's bring them on.
Well, we want to thank Andrea Romano for coming on our podcast to talk to us this week. She has seen it all and done it all, and when it comes to voice directing and animation, she always knows exactly what must be done to get the best out of people, and she's had great things to say about all the fine actors on Voltron Legendary Defender, don't you think, Greg?
She did indeed. I have to tell you that this experience of speaking with her was amazing. I mean, I sort of had the sense, as strange as this sounds, just by interacting with her for this interview, that I was sort of reliving the collective experiences of so many animated shows that I've enjoyed over the last far too many years, you know, dating back to the 80s. You know, she's interacted and worked with and coached and developed the careers of so many voice talents. I mean, it's phenomenal. And what an amazing honor it has been to have spoken with her today.
Yes, it was indeed an honor to have Andrea Romano with us today. And she is certainly one of the most respected people in the animation business. So we were lucky to have her. We also wanted to let you people know about a very important event coming up. It's New York Comic Con. If you're not one of the lucky ones to be able to go to New York Comic Con, you can follow us on Twitter, at Let's Voltron. You can look at our Facebook page, or you can listen to our podcast that we'll have after we get back from New York Comic Con. Now, for those of you who are lucky enough to be able to go to New York Comic Con, here's all the details for what's happening with Voltron at New York Comic Con. On Friday, October 7th, DreamWorks Voltron Legendary Defender signing will be taking place between 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. at Table 21 of the autographing area at the Javits Center. That's Hall 1B. A DreamWorks Voltron Legendary Defender signing with Joaquim Dos Santos, Lauren Montgomery, and Tim Hedrick will take place from 1 to 2 p.m. on Friday at Table 21 in the autographing area located in Hall 1B of the Javits Center. Now, on that same Friday, October 7th, Season 2 Sneak Peek. It's a panel. DreamWorks Voltron Legendary Defender, a Netflix original series from 2:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. on the main stage at Javits Center. Catch the world premiere of an episode from the highly anticipated upcoming second season of DreamWorks' Voltron Legendary Defender with executive producer Joaquin Dos Santos, co-executive producer Lauren Montgomery, story editor Tim Hedrick, and voice actors Jeremy Shada and Bex Taylor-Klaus. Together, they'll discuss what's in store for Team Voltron and provide a glimpse inside what promises to be an epic second season, coming soon to Netflix. All panel attendees will receive an exclusive limited edition Voltron poster. Also on that Friday, from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., the location is still to be announced, but they're talking about a Voltron Collective fan party. DreamWorks Animation presents the Voltron Collective, a collaboration of leading lifestyle and apparel brands that have created exclusive product inspired by the Netflix original series DreamWorks Voltron Legendary Defender. Event details are soon to be announced. Now, on Saturday, October 8th, there's one more thing left. A Lion Forge comic signing from 1:30 p.m. to 2:20 p.m. at booth number 1669. That's 1669. Lion Forge Comics will host a signing in their booth with writers of the Voltron Legendary Defender comic series, Tim Hedrick and Mitch Iverson. A Voltron No. 1 New York Comic Con exclusive variant cover will be available at the booth, and it's limited to 250 copies. So make sure that if you're attending New York Comic Con, you see us, because we'll be around. It'll be both Mark and Greg with you this time at New York Comic Con. We are going to be taking part in as many of these Voltron events as we can, and hopefully we'll be able to do some podcasting at the same time. So we want to thank Andrea Romano for joining us. We want to thank At Third Jim for joining us on this podcast, and we'll see you all next time on
Let's Voltron.